Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, where we discuss all sorts of things Germanic heathenry related. My name is Jesse, and I'm your host. Let's get into it.
Gjalv Aetir Workshop is dedicated to the old ways, offering a wide selection of animist ritual supplies, divination tools, altar goods, and home decor, including premium reindeer hides imported from traditional herders in northern Finland. Whether you're just starting your spiritual journey or looking to expand your collection with a custom drum, we have everything you need. Visit our online store at gjalvaetir.com and discover the beauty of mountain spirit.
Well, hail and hello there, everyone. Thanks for tuning back in here to this week's episode of the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. We are going way off the grid, the typical grid, the virtual grid, as it were, here on this week's episode. I've had many guests on this show, as you guys have come to find out. We are vastly growing our guest list with each new episode. I think the farthest I've had someone appear on this show in the past has been from Australia. We're not going quite that far, but almost about halfway-ish, maybe a little bit less. But we're staying within the, as it were, United States of America with this week's guest. We have got a guest. His name is Leif Hamilton, and he lives on the Big Island in Hawaii. He's been there for some time. He was born on Oahu, I believe, or he's going to help clarify that in case I was wrong. But he was born there. He's lived in the United States in the state of Georgia for a bit. Now he's been back on the island, the Big Island, as he calls it, now for quite some time. And he is a heathen, as he identifies. And he's going to be talking a bit about this, some studies and some research that he's been getting into with regards to the mycorrhizal network, talking about living plants, fungi, things, and their interconnectedness with other living things, us as well, and how we can find, you know, connectivity with one another, with nature, the dynamic, as it were, with the web of weird and all that kind of stuff. So I don't want to get too far into that. Before we do, however, I would like to make sure, if you are listening to this on the airwaves, on the podcast waves, whatever audio platform you're listening to this on, go ahead and favorite this or subscribe or follow me. And share it around if that's your thing. Get some other folks' interest in here as well. But don't forget also, just like the folks that are already my patrons on Patreon, you can watch this version of the podcast and all versions of the podcast of Season 5 in video format on my Patreon. The links for that are going to be in the Linktree link that is in the show notes of this podcast. Link down below for all you Patreon watchers, which I want to extend a special thanks to, because you guys help make the video versions of the podcast a thing. Your constant support in this way is greatly appreciated, and I thank you for that. So the links for that are going to be down there. And anything else that comes across the way here where people, if you're interested or you know, want to get in touch with our guest today, again, his name is Leif Hamilton, we'll see what he's got to offer for us. So he is, again, a heathen down in the Big Island of Hawaii. And he's going to be talking with us about some fungi type stuff, some plant related stuff, I'm sure. And let's welcome him in to this week's episode.
All What's right. up there?
Hey,
how's it going, Jesse?
Good. How's it going with you down in the Kona, Big Island?
Yep. I'm in Kona. It's been a little cooler the past couple days, which has been kind of nice. Cooler for us is like to the tune of 64, 69 degrees, somewhere in there. Yeah. And only getting up around 80 degrees for the past 2 days, which was nice. I work outside. I do window installations, so sometimes it can be a bit of a challenge. It's very reminiscent of the hot soup that is Georgia as well. So if anybody's listening from there, it's not quite as bad as that, but the humidity definitely gets up and it's quite choking. So at least me, I'm grateful for the cooler weather, and it's been a beautiful couple days.
The last time, well, the only time that I was ever in Hawaii, it was, I think, during November. And it was so nice. Like, back in Tennessee and everywhere, you know, like, because that's where I live now, but I'm originally from New York, you know. So everybody back on the mainland, as you guys say, was freezing their nuts off. And I'm over here, like, just chilling on the beach and walking barefoot. And I'm like, this is nuts, you know, just
right.
like 75, 80 degrees in November or something. And it was pleasant. It wasn't an unpleasant type of warmth, you know, like.
Totally.
I'm sure Georgia and like this area of the south part of the United States, how humidity can really amplify the heat. So even if it's 85 degrees, but the humidity is like 90%, it feels like it's 115, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. I'm originally from New York, and I've been living in Tennessee for almost 20 years, but every time summer comes around, I'm just like, this northern ass boy over here, I'm just like, ugh. Hate it.
yeah, I definitely feel that.
You are you were born in Hawaii, as we talked about offline, right? And then you relocated here to this you know to the mainland back in Georgia, and then found yourself back where you are now, right?
Yeah, so my dad was in the Air Force. He was a career Air Force man, did 26 years. And so he was stationed in Honolulu on Oahu, and that's where I was born. Anybody that's from there or been there knows the big pink hospital up on the hill. It's called Tripler, and it's I believe it's an Army hospital, even though like it services the Air Force as well. So that's kind of been sort of the touchstone for my birth in the family is like, yeah, you were born in the big pink hospital. It's kind of a landmark.
One of my wife's friends that she's been good friends with for years now was also born in Honolulu, I think.
Cool.
He lives over here now, and I don't know the last time he's been back over there, but he was originally born. Same kind of thing, I think, too, military. I think his dad was maybe Marine or something, you know, but that's usually what we hear about is like, you know, some of these places, like either there or it's like another country that they were born. Right. It's like, really, you don't sound like you're from, you know, Kuwait or, you know, Berlin or wherever, you know, like, no, my dad was in the military. My mom was in the military, that sort of thing. So
absolutely.
You move around a lot as a kid because of that, or?
Not really a ton. So my dad's next assignment after Oahu was in Warner Robins, Georgia. And then he did, one more assignment after that, which was in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And he was planning on retiring, and he only had like a few years left at that point. So we didn't end up relocating with him. He was up there for like 2 years and then basically came back because, you know, my parents had already bought a house. They had land. They didn't want to uproot everything and relocate just for him to retire a couple of years later. Because it was either like he had some, I don't really remember the details of it, but he had some kind of window where he could either retire in a certain window. But if he didn't retire, then he was going to have to put in like an additional 10 years to make the next promotion.
Yeah.
And so he didn't want to sign on for that deal because he was like, you know, I don't, you know, it's not worth it to me just to make one more rank to do an additional 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, after, I mean, 20 some a couple of decades. I mean, that is that's a long time to be doing something.
Absolutely.
So, you like the lifestyle in Hawaii pretty much?
Yeah.
I mean, you've been there for a while now, right? So
I have. Yeah. I've been here for about 6 years, you know, honestly, like every time I go back to the mainland, I toy around with the idea of just questioning how long I'm going to be out here. You know, honestly, we could do probably a whole episode just on living in Hawaii. I know that's not the topic of your show or what we're going to get into, but it's complicated to live here for a variety of different reasons. And it's difficult to really comprehend until you've experienced it firsthand. You know, I'd heard that from a few people before I moved here, but the area of the island that I moved to was so remote and so jungly that it was functionally like living in a third world country. You know, I had to like go into town to get water. There was like no running water, like in the place that I was living. And it was all off grid solar, propane water heater. And like a mile and a half pitted out dirt road that was hell on my car. Cause I have this tiny little Hyundai hatchback and I'm going down this literal Jurassic Park type road.
Yeah.
And there was this one particular pothole that was so deep and always full of water that whenever I would drive into it, it would literally wash over like the hood and the windshield. And I would just see this like wall of water. It was intense.
Yeah, that ain't a pothole. That's like a small cave, man.
Yeah. The pond in the middle of the road.
Yeah. He just drove through part of the Pacific, you know?
Like, yeah.
Dang,
one thing that is interesting to me, and you know, like having lived in the South, you know, I know a lot of the issues and the problems that come along with that, specifically, you know, thinking about just our freedom to practice the beliefs that we hold and how it's kind of concerning to me, sort of the regressive narrative that we're seeing kind of play out almost as this like satanic panic 2.0. Mm. And it makes me kind of concerned for people who are in our community who do openly identify as pagan, especially in those places that are so heavily Christian. Just because like it, I would just hate to see, you know, people's religious freedoms infringed like that. So I understand that side of things, but the other side of things that I think about every time I go back to the mainland is I know so many more heathens on the mainland than I do here. I honestly don't know that I've encountered another heathen on this island at this point. So it does sort of tend to feel isolated at times. I enjoy certain aspects of that. Like I've been a solo practitioner the whole time that I've been heathen. So I don't really know anything different. I have had some opportunities to do bloat with some different people and was able to do a Yule celebration this year, which was really cool. But typically like all of those experiences for me have been in the South, where I know a lot of people who are practicing. And like weirdly, that was something that kind of kept me out of heathenry for longer than I've been interested in it, I would say, is that like I would encounter, you know, people that would wear the symbolism or talk about the runes, and then I would hang out with them, and it was purely aesthetic. It had nothing to do with anything spiritual at all. And so it wasn't really until 2020 that I had ever encountered people who were actually practicing the old ways and reconstructing and bringing these kind of things back to life. And so it was something that I've kind of always had a draw towards, but never knew was like a functioning and alive religion. I just never really encountered that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, a lot of things about probably living in Hawaii on any of the islands, really, it is an isolated place. I mean, you're in the middle of the Pacific, more or less, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. So like just nobody comes there for like any big, like social things I'm talking, like just concerts or like you and I were talking offline earlier and you were like, we were talking about Hai Lung. Mm-hmm. In an episode that I was talking about Hai Lung and they're playing, you know, their last show in the United States for the foreseeable future. And you went and you pulled the trigger on getting a ticket to the Red Rocks, Colorado show. Now there's people that are living here in the United States that are griping about the fact that they're not coming within 200 miles of their city. And you're over here in the middle of the Pacific flying, you know, 2000, 3000, whatever it is, miles. Probably spending a good, I don't know what the flight is, like 8-10 hours on the plane.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Dropping I don't even want to know how much money right here. But anyway, point of the matter is, you know, you're the one. So for any of you guys listening out here and or watching this on Patreon that are complaining about, you know, you can't make the 4-hour drive to Red Rocks. Look at this guy, you know. I mean, and sit down and shut up. So go ahead about the thing you want to say.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it's gonna be an ordeal. It's an ordeal every time I go back to the mainland for anything. I was there for a little while over the Yule season, which was nice, and got to gather with some folks over there and made a Yule log and sort of did the thing this year, which was cool. And it was nice to share that with other people and to be in a collective space for a change.
I can tell you what that with, if you know, I've seen Hai Lung one time, and it was a life changing experience. I don't know how many concerts, like music events and stuff, you've gone to, but this is unlike any other concert I've ever attended. It was more like going to church, if you want to call it that. It was more of a ritual type thing.
Yeah.
So you're really gonna, and everybody that I know who's been to the Red Rocks venue there, is like, that is the perfect place for them to go here in the U.S. Like, it, the stage, the whole being out there, just the aesthetic, the ambiance, it fits what they do perfectly. So you're in for a treat.
I'm very excited about it. It's I know it's going to be a powerful spiritual experience, and I'm so ready for it. It's been a dream for a long time, specifically at that venue. I've never been to Red Rocks, and I've always just been enamored with it and just think it's the most beautiful looking venue I've ever seen. And I can't wait to experience it, especially with Hai Lung, and especially to have it be the first time I've ever seen Hai Lung. I'm just like, yes.
the bar has been set, man. The bar has been set, and you're going to be hard pressed to be finding another experience like that's going to top it, I think. So I'm happy for you that you're taking that step and making, you know, going, like you say, it'll be an ordeal. But one of the things I've said for a long time is that adversity and ordeal, these types of things, breeds worth within us and amongst people. You know, like, if we're willing to go through hardships and not let those things wear us down or kick our butts and make us useless, it allows us, you know, condition us, then our worth is proven, not just to ourselves, but to others. And so it's all in all, just a good and wholesome thing.
Absolutely. Which honestly is like a perfect segue into talking about mushrooms, because one of the first
my favorite things topic.
I would say that, yeah, absolutely. They're wonderful creatures. But one of the things that sticks out to me, especially in moving towards seeing mushrooms as a mythic element. So I like putting myth, like living myth, into the natural world. And that's kind of the sort of theme of what I want to talk about today with bringing mushrooms into it. But talking about adversity, you know, mushrooms are decomposers. They literally eat the shit that's left over, and in some cases quite literally. And then there's all of this action that takes place on a subterranean level, so you can't even really see mushrooms begin to form until they're in their fruiting stage, which is actually the last part of their life cycle. So when you see a mushroom on the ground, basically it's reached that pinnacle, that peak of its life cycle, and it's about to transition into a different form. And then it itself decomposes, and then the mushroom actually feeds on its own flesh in order to strengthen. They're called hyphae. So hyphae are kind of the individual strands that together form the mycelium. And so you can sort of think of mycelium is they call it a hyphal mat. So essentially it's a interconnected web of all of these different individual little hyphae threads, and that forms the mycelium. And in like this is one of the facts about mushrooms that I've known for a while, but every time I think about it or say it, I have to sort of visualize just how insane this is, because in every about cubic centimeter of soil, there's around 8 miles worth of mycelium. So it hurts my brain to think about.
Yeah. Like, have you ever walked 8 miles? Just, you know, like an 8 mile walk takes, you know, a few hours if you're casual about it. That's incredible. Within such a small cubic space, that many miles is covered.
Yeah, wow. And it's all like sort of interwoven, and so there's this beautiful kind of bi-armed process where things are both in symbiosis, so things are cooperating and benefiting from one another, and there's also a great amount of competition happening, but both are happening simultaneously in the same container. And so this isn't really a fully fleshed out thought, but that's kind of where my mind goes to, well, can we think about using mycelium as a mythic metaphor to help us understand the interconnectedness of Weird and Orlog? Because I feel like kind of having all of these different complex, sometimes antagonistic relationships, especially when I was in my very earliest days of being a heathen, I really struggled with. So kind of going to the lore and trying to understand, thinking of mythic time and thinking of the stories as, what's the best way that I want to put it? As not being bound to like an event, as we would think of like an event in terms of like human history, where it's something
literal like not a literal event, but maybe like metaphysical or, you know, something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like interdimensional almost, you know, and some ways that I ponder kind of bringing that into more of a tangible level. This is actually a new one. And I just sort of had this thought when I was sitting around the fire, just kind of talking shit with a friend the other night. And I started thinking about Ymir's bones and how that's what the gods fashioned the world and the cosmos out of, depending on your interpretation of the myth. And so I sort of started correlating that to the idea of, well, we know that basically all of the elements that exist on Earth at one point or another existed at the heart of a star. Like, it's all of the same things that come from these cosmic explosions deep in space, and then these particles drift throughout space and basically, you know, with heat and pressure become transmuted into something different. And so I started just as a thought exercise kind of pondering, well, what if we saw Ymir as a universe? And what if his death was the destruction of a universe, which then our universe was made out of his bones? And it was just this really cool way to kind of bring that myth to life for myself. And that kind of leads me to this way that I've been thinking about my spirituality and how I explain it to other people. And I had this distinction the other night when I was thinking about that, where I think my spiritual practice has moved into a phase of looking for meaning more than I'm looking for truth. And I think that was something that I really struggled when I was transitioning out of an old paradigm into being heathen. I sort of took a lot of the same things I learned as being raised as a fundamentalist Christian into my heathen practice. And so I kind of look at that early time as kind of this liminal space, right? Like, it's kind of not quite out of one thing and not quite this new thing, but somewhere in the middle and kind of finding my own truth and what speaks to me versus things that I've been taught or true or taught that I had to believe in some certain way. And I think for me, like, that helps just keep me moving forward on my practice, because I don't have to waste time with doubts as much anymore, because that thing being like big T truth doesn't really matter to me as much anymore. I don't really feel this need and this pressure to fully understand everything. I'm able to actually just walk my path knowing that what I'm doing is enriching my life and bringing fulfillment.
Yeah. Do you think that like you say, the big T truth, right? And I think that comes from this indoctrination modality that we find across fundamental religions or big religions. I mean, Christianity, Islam, even Judaism, for instance, has some of these really, like, everybody has this book of instructions that you're supposed to follow. And that is the big truth, right? They're, truth, whatever religion you're a part of, like, that's it, and everything else is wrong. You've got to follow this thing. Does that seem a bit limiting, you know, as you've kind of advanced and grown in your path, and now you're finding, you know, it's more important to find meaning than truth? Do you think that this idea of this big truth is more limiting than it is freeing?
I think it's super limiting. And one of the interesting things that I've seen as I've grown in my development of my own heathen worldview is becoming more of a pluralist. So things don't necessarily need to be antagonistic all the time. And someone can have a very meaningful religious experience that looks very different than mine. And as long as there's mutual respect and mutual understanding, we can have frith and we can connect on a certain level, because there's boundaries in place. There's not a push and pull. There's not a need to dim someone else's light because it's threatening to you. You find it beautiful that that's meaningful to them, because it's over here in their sphere and it's enriching their life, and they're not putting that on anyone else. They're not pushing a narrative of conformity and needing everything to be homogenous all the time. There's a lot more room for diversity of expression, diversity of paths, diversity of gods, you know, even amongst polytheists of various traditions. You know, there can be some tension there, I think, sometimes, because we want to hold on to that limitation. Somehow it brings us comfort, I think.
Yeah, I've even seen it. I've even seen that sort of thing you're describing within heathenry itself. There's so many different variants of heathenry. You know, you can be a Reconstructionist, sort of historically based heathen. You can model your heathenry after a Northern Scandinavian model. Others find themselves at home amongst a more continental Saxon style of heathenry, right, where things kind of sort of started for the Scandinavian models that we see a very popularized, right, the Norse, old Nordic stuff. And even inside of heathenry, like, there's all this infighting that goes on. It's tiresome. It doesn't seem to really benefit anyone in the long run, unless you consider people being like, see, I told you so. Like, that doesn't do anything constructive. Like, yeah, you know, I showed you, right? I found my source. I mean, what good is it really doing us in the sense of our spirituality, of our growth, to be so toxic with it, you know? And I've been there. I've experienced it with others, you know. Like, I've been that person who experienced that sort of toxicity where I've been kicked out of groups, or I've been told, you know, you can't say that to people because that's not their belief. And I'm like, I'm not trying to point them in any direction. I'm just trying to share knowledge, you know, or share information of what we know as documented facts, or this or that. And when I see the reactions of it, I'm like, all right, then I guess I'm just going to, you know, back off a bit. Because what good is it doing us if we're just trying to push our own narrative or push our own point when it comes to this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think for me, a big part of my heathenry, and also kind of thinking about that question of how we can sort of smooth those edges, bridge those gaps, comes down to hospitality. And hospitality for me starts with the self. So am I taking care of myself? Am I feeling threatened? So I always check that first, whether or not I've sort of, I just always try to take that look at myself and make sure that I'm not being pushy or threatening or, you know, disrespectful of someone else's beliefs. And then, you know, once I've checked and I've made sure that everything in my house is good, then I want to look at the actual interaction. And then I want to say, you know, is this something that is worth my time and my energy? Is this something that we can fix, or is this, you know, a person that I can no longer have friends with because those boundaries have been crossed? And yeah. I think that can be a really tricky thing to navigate.
It can be. I mean, if you spend enough time around people and you've established a bond, with frith comes obligation to one another, right? There's a shared and a mutual it's a contract in a way, you know. It's I can rely on you, you can rely on me, we can rely on each other. It's symbiotic, you know. So going back to kind of your area of focus with your studies with the mycorrhizal, am I saying that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really complicated word.
Yeah. The mycorrhizal network. So basically, like what you were saying earlier, right? All of these intricate threads that are, everything's going on beneath our feet without us even seeing it. And it's sharing nutrients, it's sharing it's communicating. It's mm-hmm. it's a means of communication, right? Everything's happening in that way. And so anyway, to go back to like what I was saying with frith and how things, sometimes those, you know, sometimes those threads get damaged, and it either, you know, depending on how strong that frith bond was to begin with, it's something that can be repaired, or it's something that needs to be like, you know what, we need to start over. We need to scratch this idea. We need to move past it. And it is a tricky thing to navigate through. It absolutely mm-hmm. is. But so how long have you been like into this path of you know, trying to find the connection between what's going on beneath our feet with the mushrooms and, you know, mycelium and all of that, and correlating it to the web of weird, which I find very fascinating, and it makes a lot of sense to me for my own reasons, which I can get into later. But how long have you been exploring this and coming into this sort of thing?
So I want to say that the idea first occurred to me probably around October of this past year. It was one of those kind of things. You go on a camping trip, and you're walking through the forest, you're communing with the nature spirits, you're having a grand old time. And at least for me, that always brings me into looking for mushrooms, because there's so many of them, especially in the places that I like to go camping. I like to go up to higher elevation, and there's some old growth forests and different species of mushrooms that I never really get to see on this side of the island, because it tends to be a lot drier. So, you know, I'm a big kid. I've always got my hands in the dirt, and I'm always looking for mushrooms and pulling apart logs and collecting bones and, you know, doing the various things that we all do. the thought of just how connected everything is in the forest has been with me for a long time. You know, I can remember having very similar ponderings and just awe and wonder as a kid, just looking at all these different things that I didn't know what they were, and just the joy of learning in that. And you know, I don't know exactly how the idea of correlating that to the web of weird was, except for just sort of seeing how the hypha grow together, and they become so dense that it literally looks like all one organism, but it's really all of these different billions and billions and billions of different, you know, tiny microorganisms that we can't even perceive. So it's connecting on even a different level. And that just really made me think of weird, right? Where, you know, we can see these different threads and tendrils and things that are very obvious that connect all of us, but there's also so much going on under the surface. And so I just started pondering it as an idea. I'm definitely still in the idea stage right now. And I'm not as super studied on a lot of that stuff as I would like to be. I've kind of made it my goal for this year to get a little bit more into the lore. I've only been a practicing heathen for about 4 years, so I'm still pretty new on my path. And I've just come to a place where I'm allowing that to be okay. And I think when I first became heathen, kind of like what I was talking earlier, I brought a lot of this baggage with me, and I felt a lot of this pressure to, you know, memorize all the names of the runes and have a basis in the lore and be able to talk about this stuff in a way that wasn't like, oh, I don't know, you know. and I had the good fortune of becoming really connected to a couple of really great heathen discords that helped me a lot in my early days. But it was the kind of thing that I would pop into a room and there was so much that I didn't know that I didn't know that I'm like, this is so on a different level. I can't even engage with this because I don't even know where to begin.
Kind of a, like, feeling a bit intimidated maybe.
For sure.
Some of the stuff that, I get that. I'm good friends with a guy who, we met initially because of my YouTube channel years ago, shortly after I started it. We established an online friendship over Facebook, and then, you know, that friendship has become where, like, he's stayed in my house a few times. He lives about 5 hours away, but we've gone, you know, he's visited me. We've gone on, last year we went on to a men's retreat in North Carolina that I helped co-found, called Fire on the Mountain. We've done things physically together to really secure our bond as friends, and it has become more of like a kinship, like where we would consider one another brothers. But he's another type of person who has his way of viewing the world. He has his way. He's definitely a heathen, but like when it comes to like the lore and stuff, you know, he's not as versed about it. And he'd be the first one if he were here to say, you know, like, yeah, it is. It's like sometimes he gets into a conversation or a group chat or a post about something, and it's like, I'm just gonna go ahead and leave now because he has you know what to offer to this, you know, conversation that you guys are talking about. And I'm like, no, stay, because first of all, you're going to be learning, right, about things that you didn't know before. And then you might say something that is going to trigger a response for somebody else that could be like, oh, yeah. And by the way, like, there's this verse in the stanza of a blah, 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 whatever, you know, like it could open up different possibilities of learning. And as we're talking about the topic that we're talking about, to me, that is how we tie our weird together. We're doing things, we're weaving weird, as it were, right? I've said this in the past too. We are shapers ourselves. We are shapers of weird. We're the ones that are tying these threads and weaving these things to connect and interconnect. So it's adding the layer, right? Everybody has their own web that they're weaving. And then when we get into stuff like even this, right? This is a way of tying weird, because we're weaving words, we're talking, and while it may not be person to person, face to face in the same room, we're afforded the luxury of being able to talk and have a conversation over long distance like this. And this is planting seeds for you. You're planting seeds for me. The listeners, the viewers are having seeds planted for them. They're gonna start thinking and exploring things too. So it's this ongoing, and then who knows what happens from those seeds that get planted, right? Who knows what then we go and do with the things that come into our minds or escape from our mouths that are coming from our hearts. It's all that subterranean stuff, right? It's all happening in that under the surface type of thing, you know? And then it manifests, it blooms, it fruits like you talked about, into the works, the things that happen, right? You get connected with somebody in your area, maybe, or, you know, you end up meeting some people in Colorado when you go to Heilung, and you become friends, and then that friendship becomes, who knows, right? Like, it's, again, it's all about that interconnectedness that we know about it because science has proven that it's literally happening all the time, has been happening since the dawn of time. And now there's more people like yourselves and others that are starting to, oh wow, like focus on it, like take note of it and be a part of it. Like, let me get my bare feet on the ground. Let me absorb some of those things that are happening beneath my feet and charge my own self with this type of life, with this type of activity. You know, I think that's why we feel so well, so wholesome, so healthy after being barefoot, connected to the ground like that. It's a part of our makeup. It's a part of our physical makeup. It's a part of our spiritual makeup. No matter what label or what name you want to put to it, it's primal. It's kind of just who we are.
Absolutely. Yeah. So to talk a little bit more about the Mycorrhizal Network. So essentially what that is it's the interplay between the root structures of plants and the mycelium network. So it's a symbiotic relationship between two fairly dissimilar types of creatures, really. So a lot of people kind of lump fungi and plants together if they're not really familiar with those distinctions. But another mind-blowing thing about mushrooms is we actually share anywhere from 30 to 50% of our DNA with fungi. Yep. So mushrooms are actually
fungi. Have you seen that documentary?
I have. Yeah.
How many times have you seen it?
I think three.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna say you can't just watch it one time.
No, it's so good. Yeah. You know, I've been fascinated by mushrooms my whole life, and there's so many different really cool life lessons I think we can take just from looking at their life cycle. And then this beautiful interplay between mushrooms and plants has always fascinated me because, I mean, mushrooms are we're actually closer to being mushrooms than mushrooms are to being plants.
Absolutely.
But yet you have these things that across the bounds of being a different type of thing, it would be like a human being able to communicate with an animal. And of course, like, we can communicate with animals, but it would be like if we could speak in a language that they would actually understand. So we communicate through body language, through emotion, through these different signs that we then interpret, and we can learn that behavior, and that allows us to communicate with them. But in the mycorrhizal network, these mushrooms and plants can literally send information and nutrients back and forth. And there's even been documented instances of fungi kind of directing tree roots to grow in a certain way so that they can more readily find water. And so it's kind of this orchestral, it's like orchestrating kind of the growth of the forest. And so that mycelium is what kind of moves and mats and blankets everything and interconnects everything. And I sort of visualize that as just constantly weaving weird. It's constantly just pulling more things through these different choices and these avenues and these encounters with other things. And it's just encompassing a larger and larger area as more and more beings are added into that. And I think it's a beautiful representation of the path of life itself, because it's all different parts of the process. It's decomposing. So it's literally turning death into life. And then when you get to that fruiting stage, it's literally making a sacrifice. It's giving an offering of itself back to itself in order to strengthen those hyphal knots. And so, you know, if we wanted to draw a mythic comparison to that, you could even see archetypes from the story of Odin hanging on the tree to receive the runes. You know, he sacrificed himself to himself in order to attain that knowledge. And there's a mythic element to that. Which is cool. I sort of love the idea of just kind of thinking of this web of weird existing under Yggdrasil and just interconnecting all of the things. And yeah, I don't know. It's cool. Yeah. And it's been fascinating to play with, and I'm excited to get deeper into the research and hopefully actually be able to write something on it eventually.
Hell yeah, man. I think you can even like take it out. You know, one of the ways that I've kind of gone in my spirituality has been very similar to, maybe not quite as so like, I mean, maybe more academic to what you're doing is like studying the whole science behind it. I wouldn't say I've gone quite so far as that, but the more animistic side, you know, really finding a connection with the land and knowing that there is spirit in everything. Totally. And not just knowing that there is spirit, not just thinking that, yeah, I think I believe that, you know, the rocks, the trees, the water, that everything has spirit. But actually going out and becoming a part of that existence, you know, feeling what it's like to be a part of that for even just a moment, you know, whether it's through, you know, walking barefoot, sitting in, you know, river walks or cold water immersions in the river, or doing the various things that I've done to connect, you know, with nature, going on hikes and, you know, in the woods and just all the various ways of getting back to that. That's really where my path has taken me. That's where those signals have kind of fed me in the direction of, if you will, you know. And we see very, very readily in like modern imagery, the web of weird as being this very linear, triangular kind of, you know, looks almost look like lattice work type of symbol. You've probably seen it. They call it the web of weird, right? I don't know where it initially came from and who initially came up with it, but I gotta imagine it's a relatively new symbol. Mm-hmm. But the more I go down the path that I'm going, it's, you know, the web of weird to me is more intricate than that of a spider. It's more like a cocoon almost, in a way. Like everything's not tight like a cocoon, but you know what I'm saying? Like the threads are more intricate and they're more finite. Like you can barely see some of them. There's some that are really, really thick, like almost like a root. Some of them are really prominent and others are more like as fine as a hair.
Mm-hmm.
They're still doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're still serving their purpose, but you barely notice them, or maybe not even at all. And connected with that and be, you know, feeling a part of all that and seeing what that's like through, you know, whether it's through just nature walks or connecting physically, or whether it's through other means of connectivity, maybe, you know, practices of a more shamanic nature, you know, plant medicine, that sort of thing. I think it becomes a part of certain people's practices when we talk about stuff like this. I mean, it almost is like a natural progression. You know?
Yeah, a lot of my practice is informed by that stuff for sure. I've had a lot of experiences with plant medicine and fungal medicine as well. And I think that, man, if I could say that anything is a more readily available and powerful avenue into experiencing the spirit world in a very tangible way, it's psilocybin mushrooms. Like they consistently will reveal entities to you and will communicate with you. And it was interesting in my sort of early days of having those experiences. I couldn't quite explain how I could be interfacing with the spirit of the mushroom and also like the spirit of the literal mushroom that I took. Like, They were distinct entities, and I didn't have any language or ability to really comprehend what I was experiencing. But I was both sort of tapped into this larger spirit, or Vaitir, or however you want to think of it, and I was also interfacing with the spirit of the individual mushroom that I had consumed. And it was fascinating because it sort of took me on this roller coaster of emotions, and I could tell that it wasn't coming from me, but I had no Like at that time in my life, I had sort of just transitioned out of Christianity. I had no idea what was even out there because I grew up really, really sheltered. And so
yeah, me too.
I had all these really early shamanic and powerful nature spirit experiences that I just absolutely did not know what to do with. And it's been cool because now my pagan practice really informs a lot of that. And I can look back on those experiences and I can integrate a lot more of that and at least sort of understand what I was experiencing and what I was going through and forming more of a language to interpret that. Almost like a practice of writing my own myth for myself out of my life. So I'm taking these sort of like one-off experiences and turning them into a way to learn and to grow and to continue myself on my path.
Yep. And it does. It does inform a lot of my practice too. Talking about, you know, the plant medicine, psilocybin is I hope to exist long enough to see in my timeline that stuff like this is advocated to the point where it's not so stigmatized.
Same, you know? Here, man. Same here.
Because I've seen so many things happen for good for people, not, and myself included. You know, I'm one of the people who is, dosed enough times and gone on trips and done things that are I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for that, and I'm thankful mm-hmm. for those experiences, and it's constantly, you know, it's like one of those things where that first time was like a big huge what the f do I do with this
right
like, holy shit, like how do I process all this. And it took time after the fact to get to that point where I'm like, I think I know what I need to do with this, right? Like you kind of, it's like it's almost like being reborn, you know, having to relearn things or learn things from start even. So now every time since then, right, it's almost like going back and speaking with an old friend. But there's still new things that happen each and every time that it's like, you know, you can take a substance, and a lot of substances are going to give you a lot of the same results each and every time. Mushrooms ain't one of them. Experience is going to be different. Each experience is going to be different. This, you know, those little guys know what needs to happen, knows how you need to be kind of, you know, taught in a way, you know, kind of knows what you need to go through. And even if you're petrified in the process, it's like, well, this is what you needed to go through. I mean, it's a necessary part of it. And it's a beautiful, I think it goes back to what you were talking about, how those things that are happening underneath, they are, some of them are feeding, some of them are destroying. Like there's so many things happening that are necessary to make the whole work, function, live, thrive, but some of it's not so savory. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we got to direct things over here and let this part over there suffer for it or die out or whatever, you know what I mean? Because we got to focus on this new spot that we're, you know, needing to put our attention to. It's like it's a manifestation of what is happening. We get a glimpse into that, I think, when we're experiencing those substances. I don't know what you think about it, but that's kind of what I think. It's like we're a part of that system for a brief time.
Totally. I remember clearly the first time that I ever had an experience that could be considered an ego death or just the loss of body, of separate self. And when I came back from that, I had this very distinct sense that what I had just experienced was the full life of the mushroom. So I experienced kind of the conception, consciousness, death, and then rebirth of the mushroom itself. And I got to sort of, like ride that almost like in a spacesuit from the inside, you know, like it was sort of this miniaturization of experiencing my own life. Right. And that's where you can kind of tie that fractal reality into it, where everything kind of becomes a mirror in that space. And you're having a synchronized experience with another spirit, with another entity. Mm-hmm. And you're sharing something that's unique to that moment. And that's why I think those experiences are so profound. They shape the way that we view everything, you know, both during and after for a lot of people. And they become very, very meaningful experiences. And they're absolutely wonderful creatures.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if have experienced that. So I've done, I've had experiences that I've shared with other people, trusted people. Those experiences have been great. And then only recently did I actually go and do a solo experience where it was just me and nature. And that was like super revelatory in ways that my other experiences in the past with others were not. You know, every other past experience were great, and they were wonderful in their own ways. And this one, most recent, where it was just me and nature and the gods, and that was it. There was no other, person like me there that I could share in the experience with. It was very intimate, you know. And it was like there wasn't any of this other, I don't want to say distractions, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like when you're with other people. Yeah. You know, there's just a lot going on, you know, you're dealing with your stuff, they're dealing with their stuff, and we're all dealing with each other's stuff together.
Absolutely.
And it can become this really, like you say, like a roller coaster ride of things. There were times that I remember being angry. There were times I remember being sad. There were times I remember being afraid, and super happy, right? Just kind of going through that gamut of the human experience, you know, feeling so many things at once and trying to figure out, well, when am I supposed to feel it? And it doesn't matter. The when doesn't matter. Because, like the time, what the hell is even that? You know, like,
yeah, right. Oh yeah. Forget about it.
You know? And I think that's another part of when we talk about like weird and the shaping of it, you know, it's happening in our sense of time, right? The things that we're experiencing and maybe wanting to focus our efforts and all that on, right? This is happening in the profane space and time that we all are confined to in our day-to-day lives. Everything else is happening, you know, there's sacred space and time, things that are happening in their own way. And so it's like, time is relative. You know, when we're doing things, how we're doing, it's all relative to, you know, just what we're confined to, and tying that the science back to the myth or you know, you say creating your own myth to it, it really helps, I think, connect us better to the religiosity or the spirituality sides of things. You know, you can really see how, you know, thousands or however many years ago it was when the, you know, Germanic people came up with this idea that, you know, Ymir, you know, his bones were the what made up, you know, the realms and all of this, like you were talking about earlier, like you can kind of see where maybe not literal bones, but that's what gets translated into it now. It was more like this just sinew and threads of our existence that became everything. Because you look at microscopic images of the known universe, and when you like zoom in like a million times or whatever, it becomes more fibrous.
Yeah,
same as us, like our DNA, like we become more fibrous. And then you look at the mycelial network and you look at mushrooms and oh wow, big surprise, right? It's all all these fibers, you know.
Yeah, that point that you just made right there is what initially just sparked my absolute fascination with mushrooms, because if you look at, especially if you grow mushrooms on something like, say you take a wood loving mushroom, you can grow wood loving mushrooms on cardboard. They don't really need a lot else. It helps if you stuff it with something if you want to actually get fruit, but I've successfully grown oyster mushrooms like on a cardboard box stuffed full of straw, and then I just put the oyster mushrooms in there and it eventually just eats the whole box. So it colonizes from the inside out, and then eventually the threads will connect to the box and it will actually consume the box itself. What I learned from that first experience is if you're going to do this, it's best to take some cellophane tape and wrap the whole outside of your box and then cut a couple of holes where you want mushrooms to pop out, because I didn't do that the first time and I had this incredible pin set. There were like probably 500 mushrooms on this little tiny box and I was blown away. I was like, oh my god, I have the mother load, I got all the mushrooms. Yeah. But it ran out of stuff to eat. So none of them really matured. So they kind of like grew a little bit and then fizzled out because there wasn't enough nutrients to sustain that heavy of a pin set. So you want to limit your spots that you can get mushrooms if you're growing that way. Sorry for the ADHD tangent. I said all that to say that when you first see mycelium growing on cardboard, it looks like a tree. It looks like this tiny little tree. And it also looks like the inside of our lungs, and it looks like the universe itself. And it's this beautiful representation of just how like everything is made out of the same stuff. We're all sort of in these different processes together, but yeah, we're all this mirrored reflection of a very, very similar yet distinct experience. And I just find that fascinating.
It is fascinating. I was talking to, I think it was a couple of podcasts ago, maybe a week or two. Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where like one of the things that came up is that, you know, we're not part of this meaning just all of it. Like, we're not part of this. We are it. Like, we are mm-hmm. this. And yeah, like to be like, so, and I think the reason we focused on the separation of being part of it versus being it is, you know, if I'm part of a group or if I'm part of, you know, a company, there's a sense of connectivity, but there's also a bigger sense sometimes of disassociation. Like, oh, I'm just a number on a, you know, in a hat, or I'm just a, you know, a name on a roster, you know, I'm not really doing anything. Well, when you change the mindset and you go, well, I am that, well, then everything you do is affecting the rest of it. It's the web of weird, right? What we do now, right? The vibration, the work that is being put into this thread is going to vibrate and travel however long, however far, maybe not very far, maybe far, just depends on how much we're putting into it, to the rest of it. It's going to impact it. It has this ripple effect, this trickling of down of impact. So when you take that mindset, or, you know, when we were talking about that on that show, it was like, yeah, put yourself into it, make yourself, you know, you are it and it is you and we are it and it is I and I am we
and we're all together.
And you get into some real deep. And I think it's an interesting thing too, especially given the fact that, you know, you are on an isolated, for all intents and purposes, you know, you are isolated from the bigger part of the world, you know, even though Hawaii has, you know, forgive me, I'm rusty on my geography. So is it 9 islands, 11 islands? How many islands make up Hawaii?
There's 9 major ones.
9 major islands, right?
Yeah.
Spread out. But, you know, in respect to the, you know, the world and all that, like, you guys are kind of out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Literally halfway across the Pacific Ocean, right in the middle.
Exactly. You know, you go one way, you're in Asia. You go the other way, you're in California, you know, and you're kind of smack dab in the middle of nowhere. And yet, connecting, you know, being connected to nature, finding this association, this affiliation, with weird. Distance doesn't make a difference. You know, like in our limited sense of it, it does, because you think, oh damn, I'm, you know, 2,000 miles away from the nearest, you know, In-N-Out or whatever.
You know? 100%.
Like, you know, like stuff like that. Or, you know, whatever. It's like, yeah, within our limited scope of perception, it does make a difference. But when it comes down to what really matters, we're still connected. We're still close.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. And sometimes I forget, because like I said, I've only been identifying as heathen for around the last 4 years. And before that, I was sort of this amorphous, new age-ish kind of pseudo spirituality thing. It just kind of came along with the territory of sort of the other things that I was into.
Was that on the island or was that in the States? If you don't like, or I mean the States, but like, was that on the mainland or was it on the island that you were?
A little of both. So it started for me before I left the mainland, but it definitely continued here. Kind of like doing the whole hippie new age thing for a while. And after a bit, and now I look back on it even more so now, I look back on it and I'm like, you know, I wasn't really doing anything that different than I was when I was a Christian. Like, you know, on the face of it, they had all of these different teachings and beliefs and whatnot. But when I really got down to the core philosophies, a lot of them were the same. They sort of teach you that you're a piece of shit, that there's nothing redeemable about you until you go through some magical process. And, you know, suddenly you're redeemed or you're saved from what your God is going to do to you anyway. And it's just like, I sort of started to have the same kind of like, wait a minute, thoughts about that stuff that I did about Christianity, because I started to see all these people talking about ascending to 5D and escaping the Matrix and yada, yada, yada. And it was all this escapism. It was looking to the future. It was looking to what happens when we die. And it had very little to do with nature or with this lived experience that we have now. And I started to find that really unfortunate, because there's such a vast richness of spirituality and really connecting to the land. And that's where life is. That's where this moment is. And if we're so busy on our philosophies and our understandings, and you know, even as heathens, we can get distracted by, or even experiences and practices, and sort of miss what's happening in the moment in favor of staying in this very academic place. And I struggle with that. I tend to be sort of very philosophically minded, so I can get into these sort of places where I have to check myself, and I look back and I'm like, you know, I'm doing a lot of thinking about my spirituality, but I'm not actually doing a lot of praxis. I'm not tending my hearth. I'm not making offerings. I'm not actually connecting with the God spirits and ancestors. I'm sort of wearing all these trappings, but am I really incorporating this into my life? Is this a lifestyle and a worldview, or is this just another way to make me feel better about myself because I'm doing something good? Right. And so like, I have to check those motives too, because I'm like, am I truly giving a gift out of the spirit of hospitality, out of the spirit of goodwill? Or am I constantly thinking about is it transactional? Am I just asking for things, or am I really giving of that spirit of gratitude and wanting to connect with the spirits around me? Is it a relationship, or am I trying to always achieve something? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes really good sense. You mentioned like this, you know, escapism, right? Trying to, you know, figure out the next thing to like get away from the way that we were feeling. I think what we're talking about now at this point is embracing the way that we're feeling and attacking it. You know, maybe that's a harsh term, but I mean, going in to do the work, You know what I mean? Like, not trying to escape it, but confronting it, facing it off. And if it needs to be that we battle it head on and deal with it and put it to rest, then that's what we do. I had a very vivid experience with that at, I mentioned earlier in the show, the Fire on the Mountain men's retreat that I go to every year just for about the last few years. And one of the things that we did at this past event was a sort of death ceremony where each person that attended was ritually put to rest on a sort of like a pyre, not a pyre, but like almost how you would put someone on a boat and send them off in the water, you know?
Nice.
And we were placed on this makeshift. It was really just a plank of, or planks of wood on the land near a body of water. So there was someone representing someone who would like kind of be the ferryman to carry you down to hell, to your final resting place, you know, so you could hear the water, but you were covered in a veil. You were like a blanket was laid over you, and with you were your ritual, or not just ritual, but like any items that you would want to take with you to that afterlife. And prior to that was a ritual that we went into this headspace of anything that came up in our meditation, anything that came up that was a less than desirable part of our past, a trauma, something like that, we weren't gonna avoid it anymore. We were going to seek it out. We were like, what is that one thing? What is that thing that has been fucking with me my whole life? And I'm gonna go internally and I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna go hunting for this thing. I'm going to seek it out. I'm going to go armed. Like, we each had literal our weapons of choice. Somebody had like a staff. I had a sword. Somebody else had axes and knives. Like, we went into our mind with our physical weapons in our possession as if we were going to fight an enemy. And that, again, it goes into like this. We're not trying to escape from it anymore, you know? We're going into this to confront it, to attack it, to beat it, to defeat it, to go into war against these things. And that's part of the process, man. Like, that ends up becoming what is happening underneath our feet, right? There are things happening where, you know, this root system might be vying for this root system's life. And, well, guess what? We both can't work here. You know,
yeah,
somebody's going to take over. Somebody's going to be the victor. And that's nature. And that's us too. Like, you know, you can't avoid stuff. You can't just take substances or do anything to escape the issue. Eventually, you know, because if you do that, the issue is going to outrun you. You're only going to be able to run from it for so long. Eventually it's going to catch up, and then you're going to be too tired from running all the time to be able to deal with it. It's better to equip yourself to go up and face this fucking thing once and for all and be done with it. And sure, you may come out battered, bruised, and feeling kind of wore out from it all, but at least you've done the hard work and you've put yourself into that ordeal of facing it all. And now you know what to go forth with, and you're better equipped to deal with all the other stuff, right? The nutrient, the rebuilding, the regrowth, the rebirth.
You gotta
rip those threads apart to start over. Like I was talking about earlier, sometimes those threads get damaged, and it's like, I gotta start over again.
Yeah.
Part of that starting over is, well, we can't just weave over this tangled mess of shit. We've gotta undo it all. We gotta rip it apart, and we gotta start a whole new thing. So.
Yeah. That's badass, dude. And I think it sort of connects the place that I sort of logically take that is that, like, death and life only seem to be antagonistic from a certain vantage point. They're actually the same thing. There is no death and life. Like, life exists because of death, and death exists because of life, and the two cannot be separated. It is the process of what we call life is the process of being born, living, dying, and then being born again. Like, there is this reciprocal relationship, and we're all, you know, whether or not you believe or have reincarnation in your practice, we're all made out of other dead stuff. It's just a fact of life. Life feeds on life. And in order to perpetuate that, things are constantly transmuting themselves and changing into different forms. And so, yes, there might be that death of a certain organism, let's say like the mycelium and the roots are competing, and perhaps the mycelium takes so much from the soil that plant can no longer live and it dies. Well, then it becomes food for the mushroom that's living in the soil itself. And then eventually those cells decompose and then become that mushroom itself. And so it's not that like the plant has now transformed into a mushroom. It's that the mushroom continues to live because the plant has become a part of it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. I've seen like one of the most visceral representations of that. I think it was maybe the carcass of a raccoon. Ooh. That had decomposed, basically passed its skin just down to the bones. And a photographer had taken a picture. If I find it, ended up putting it up here on screen for people to see. But it's like the paw. It was either a possum or a raccoon or something. But like the paw of the critter, which was, again, nothing, pretty much just bones, had out of the paw growing mushrooms.
Wow.
Yeah, like
that's pretty cool.
The thing that like helped decompose the life of the animal ended up becoming life in itself.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gnarly, man. If I find the picture, I'll send it to you, but I'll try to put it up here on screen, because it's, again, it's like one of the most visceral representations of what we're talking about, right? It's death isn't the end of something; it's the continuation of just the cyclical existence of nature. We are it. That's it. That's us, you know? So part of us, we are eternal. We are eternal beings. And regardless of what you believe in spiritually or religiously, I mean, we are eternal beings. So there is an expiration date to this meat suit and, mm-hmm. you know, the things that make up the physical composition of what we are. But that is not who we are. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
We are part of that unseen too. There is, when this physical part of things has expired, we exist. We still exist. Parts mm-hmm. of us still continue to exist, and that goes back to some of what you said too, like the weird and the Orlog or Orle, right? Depending on the pronunciation you want to take, that Orle is that primal layer that's always been there, that we're constantly feeding and is being passed down through our ancestry. So the things that we're doing now are feeding those roots, that well, and then our descendants are being fed from that source to continue, and we're all intertwined, we're all a part of that. So it's a big huge web
of weird.
We spell it WYRD, but it is. It's weird, man.
But
it is weird.
But it is odd as fuck.
I love it. And I'm excited to see, you know, if you get to a point, man, where you have more material, whether it's diagrams or you know, book or anything that you come up with in your further studies on this, and you want to come back on the show and talk more about it, you know, consider this an open invitation. Just let me know and we'll figure it out.
Awesome, man. I can't wait to see where it goes. You know, there's a lot of different rabbit holes that my brain will want to go down, I'm sure. And I can't wait to explore them all and come up with something neat out of it.
Yeah. Now, while we're talking about that, right, since it is something that you're working on and it's a project that you're kind of taking point on, is there, like, if people want to connect with you, I usually ask this of all my guests, right? If people want to connect with you, maybe bounce some ideas or talk with you more about it, because I'm sure this is going to strike an interest for a lot of different people. Is there a way that people can get in touch with you if they want to?
Well, I don't really have a whole lot of pluggables. I have a private Instagram, and I'm on Discord. Okay. So I'm in the Skithblathnir Discord. I'm also in the Around Grandfather Fire Discord. So if anybody listens from there, you can connect with me there. I'm Eld Fennel on Discord. Okay. And I can also text these to you or whatever. If you want to drop me the
details, cause I'll add it to the show notes and the description and all that stuff. So people can, if they want to, cause there's actually a lot of the heathen people have gravitated toward Discord. There's one guy that I follow on Facebook. He's going to be a guest here soon too. But his social media is the Heathen Nerd. He's on TikTok.
I've encountered him before.
Yeah, Chris is his name. He's got a Discord server that he does regular stuff on. So I know a lot of heathen folk are gravitating towards that platform. So that'll probably be nice for people to find you, and you can connect with them in that way. So yeah, just shoot me the details. I'll link it all in the show notes for people to find you on, if that's okay.
Okay, yeah, that's totally cool. And then I'm also working on another project right now as well. I'm currently trying to write a prayer and liturgy book. I'm calling it Heathen Hearthfire. And right now I'm in probably about 25, 30 pages deep into writing it. I'm going to be creating a Patreon for it soon when it gets into a little bit more of the I have a manuscript phase. So I can send that to you once that launches as well. If you wanted to add that on, it probably won't be anytime soon, but maybe if I come on again, we can talk more about that. And, I've been really excited about that. I kind of started it as just this collection of different prayers that I had written. Cause when I first started practicing my hearth cult, I was really awkward, right? I would just be like, okay, so I know some names of some gods, and that is about it. And it'd be like, okay, what do I do? How do I heathen? You know, and
how do I heathen? Yeah,
yeah.
And how you heathen's different from how everybody else does.
Yeah, yeah. It's the age old adage, right? You ask five heathens, and you'll get six answers.
Yep, at least. At least, yeah, man, definitely. Yeah. So, yeah, whatever you got, just shoot it my way, and I'll be sure, you know, folks listening and watching by this point, you'll have it to check out there. Just go to the show notes, and for you folks on Patreon watching this, it'll be down in the description. So
nice.
But, yeah, man, this was great. I think we got a good episode here. We can wrap it up. Anything else you want to say to the people that are listening and watching before we sign off?
No, I don't really think so. I've enjoyed getting to talk about this. I was a little bit scatterbrained in the beginning. I was a little nervous, so it took me a little bit to get going. So
yeah, me too. It's always that. It's always like, oh, I'm talking to somebody new. How do I, you know, get through this? But nah, man, I think you did great. You were really awesome. Well spoken, and shared a lot of good thought provoking information. I thoroughly enjoy talking about stuff like this, even though I don't claim to know a whole hell of a lot about it. It speaks to me, and so I speak from a place of just what feels, you know, how I feel about it. But yeah. I'm excited for you, man, to share with more people what you discover with it all.
Yeah, I like it as a concept. It kind of ticks all my boxes. It ticks my I want to nerd out and get really granular and check everything out and learn all this stuff and information, and it also ticks my spirituality box, where I like to go get weird in the wood with drums, you know, like
yes.
And I had a really powerful experience of that recently. I was kind of going through a hard time. I sort of got hit with bad tax news yet again, and I was already stressed about money, and I just was in this, I was already in a depressed state too. And so that happened, and I was just like, great, there goes all of my progress over the last half of a year. That's going to set me up to be in the hole for a long time this year. And just like, great. So I was kind of going through that, and I went through that for a few days, just feeling really shitty and down. And then it sort of just like occurred to me as this, like, well, you haven't made any offerings. You haven't said a single prayer about it. Like, why are you, it wasn't this like guilt thing. It was just this, like, why do you feel like you have to suffer alone? Like, why aren't you reaching out when you know that it's going to be beneficial for you to do that? And it was a very different voice that I'm used to, like, hearing in my head, right? Like, I think a lot of times in my past, I would experience that as guilt of just like, you son of a bitch, you're not even praying, you're doing spirituality, yeah, blah, blah. But it was just like this almost simple, like, oh, how could I forget that this simple act of just asking for help is sometimes all it takes, you know? And so I had that thought, and then I went out and I built a big fire. I had this plan. I was going to like do this whole ritual, which I didn't end up doing because I had really low spoons that day. And I was like, you know what? I really just feel the need to sit by this fire and play a drum. And that's exactly what I did. I invoked Thor. I said a few words, and then I just played my drum for like an hour and a half and just vibed with this fire. And then I thanked the fire after it burned out. And I went back inside, and just that little moment of recognition, dude, I slept fantastic that night. I felt completely different the next day. And I was like, I literally just needed to take a second and symbolically give my worries to the gods, take a step back from it, stop getting lost in the weeds of how am I going to do this? How am I going to figure this out? And just ask for that presence. You know, I wasn't asking for something to be taken away, or, you know, I want you to fix this, or I need money. It was just like, help.
Can you talk, hang out with me for a minute? Yeah. Yeah.
Like, can I just please not be alone in this moment? And I think, like, noticing that, I feel like the way that I have started to pray over the last year has become really different. And it's a lot more of stuff like that. It's like, when I do ask for things, it's usually for like some form of assistance, where I'm asking Thor for courage, or I'm asking Odin for wisdom, or I'm asking Freya for fierceness, or I'm asking Frigg for compassion, like whatever it is. It's like something that I feel that God would possess in greater measure than I do. And I'm just asking for a little bit more of it so that I can then go and accomplish my task. Right. And that's much more of the way that I'm praying these days. And it seems to be not only doing wonders for myself and the way that I relate to the gods themselves, it is very effective as well. And it really doesn't take much. And I'm just noticing all of these blessings from these little simple acts. And I think I blow it up in my head sometimes, where I feel like it's got to be this big sacrifice or this special bloat, or I have to do this, that, or the other, or nothing's going to happen. And then, you know, but these little ways that I can make offerings in my daily life, like sometimes I'll just have a bag of tobacco when I'm walking around, and I'll find a cool spot, and I'll just, you know, leave a little pinch of the tobacco, say a little prayer, you know, thank the whites of the land for, you know, allowing me to pass through there. And then I go on my way. And I've just really enjoyed kind of building those, you know, I might not go back to that spot or have a continuing relationship with that spirit, but the fact that I was there and I acknowledged it, like, is both meaningful to that spirit and also to me. And so it's just this way to kind of carry my faith with me and incorporate that into something that I'm constantly doing, so I can sort of look behind me and go like, well, I'll be damned, I was making offerings the whole time, and it wasn't even this huge outpouring of energy. It just sort of naturally flowed out of the way that I live my life.
That's beautiful, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for letting me share.
That's great. I think that's a great thing to end this on. You can hang out for a second, because when we're done signing off, I'll wrap with you for just a couple, so that way you know what to expect after this. But this has been great. I appreciate you taking the time out of your afternoon to come here, you know, with the time difference and everything. We made it work, and I appreciate that. So
yeah,
good stuff, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me on. This has been a lot of fun, and I enjoy getting to put those thoughts out in front of me and look at them again, because it helps me formulate different ways of thinking, and it's been a very enjoyable time.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm glad it was good for you, and for everybody else that's listening and watching to this episode, if you did like it, give it a thumbs up, follow it, the podcast on whatever platform that you are catching this on. Don't forget to check out every way that you can support Midgard Musings, the production of this podcast, by heading into the Linktree link that's shared in the show notes or the description area, wherever it is that you are. And check out stuff that Leif has going on. Follow him, you know, connect with him on Discord. It seems to be where he's at. So check all that stuff out if you want to connect with him. And that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Thank you all for tuning in and watching and listening. Until we talk again, may the gods continue to notice you, and may your ancestors smile upon you. We'll see you in the next one.